This is Grady Wittenberg, the voice of the Binghamton Senators, and you're listening to Sens Call-Ups.
Studio 65 on the Sens Underground Network. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of the Sens Call-Ups for Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. I'm Cardinal, and I'm here with Canuck and Pam. Over the past week, the Sens have been struggling against some of the best teams of the league. And although the last game was entertaining, the losing skid is getting longer, and the team is dropping down the standings. You can send us email at podcast@senscallups.com. You can find us on Twitter, and you can participate in the online forums. Boys, are you hotter than a ghost pepper burrito about the team's play of late?
Oh, I could go for a ghost pepper burrito right now.
Yeah, you guys wanted to go for that. I was like, no, no, thank you.
Yeah, we got to do that. We only got a couple days left.
Yes, you have to go do that.
They're delicious.
You can record it.
I will be on fire from both ends.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Actually, no, you won't. Doesn't do that.
I can't handle it.
Oh, they're delicious.
I don't remember what it was. I think I made curry chicken with just like yellow curry that was pretty old too. Because once again, single guy, what the hell? I've got food in here from when I lived in Toronto in the last lockout. And I was just sweating. Just sweating.
But that's what hot food's supposed to do. It's okay.
Actually, speaking of sweating, I went to yoga for the first time, because as some of you listeners from last year will know, I'm looking to get in shape or get into a shape. Yoga's weird.
Are you the hot yoga or regular?
I did it. It was an introductory class with my trainer. And so first thing, like, I walk in and I'm pretty uptight and tense and high strung all the time, right? Very high energy. They walk in. I don't see a clock on the wall, which obviously they won't have there. But it's like, geez, I don't know what time it is ever. I don't like that. So we lie down. She's like, all right, so stop thinking about anything. It's impossible. Anyway, so I did the class. And some of the things that they make you do is like go into this happy baby pose. I was like, this just sounds ridiculous. It's like, yeah, so this is good. It'll stretch out your back and the ligaments and all of that. And then it opens up your chakra for your creativity. I was like, what? None of this makes sense to me. I don't know. Anyway, so because I was thinking about nothing, I planned out my whole week, which was kind of productive. That's the multitasking that I do, I guess.
Well, as long as you feel better about it.
Yeah. I'm kind of bendy now, so it's kind of fun. What have you guys been up to?
Oh.
How do you feel about Presto cards?
Oh.
Lights, fuse, stands back. Go!
Yeah, well, if you got me this morning, it would have got me really hot. Yeah, I'm going to sound like Shredder now. This city is so bass-ackwards. For anyone outside of Ottawa, including you, who is it? CB Inc.'s always making fun of us doing this.
CB Inc.'s got the same system, though.
Yeah, so we have this new system for transit, using it on the bus, and it's nothing new to other cities. Washington has this. They have it in London. They have it everywhere. Have it. You have a card, and you swipe your card when you go on the bus, and it takes money off your account. Simple, right? But no, our city has to go, and not just our city, our province has to go, and instead of using existing well-proven technology, they have to go and create jobs and create this new local Ontario-built system called Presto Card. So, if it works, it works great. I've had my experiences where I go on, I use the card, it works. Love it. But here's the kicker. I had to use the bus yesterday and today. So, yesterday morning, I get up, check my balance online. Oh, I only have about $2 left. Ooh, that's not going to get my bus ride down and back, let alone some of the inner bus meetings I have to do. Okay, load it up online. At $50. Your payment will be processed within 24 hours. What? I got to take the bus now. So anyway, I know that they allow an overdraft. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm checking my pocket for change. Okay, I'll be all right. And so I go on, I try the card. Boonk. Minus $2. Okay, so the overdraft worked. Okay, so I go downtown. Had to use cash the rest of the day. Annoying, that stupid delay. So anyways, at least I think...
Not only that, your cash is also more expensive per ride too, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more expensive. Yeah. So I wake up this morning, it's like, well, thankfully I put the $50 on the card now, because now I'm going to have a good balance on the card and use it for a while. Happened to check some comments on Facebook, and like, are you kidding me? So I go and check my balance, minus $2.07. Apparently, when you go into overdraft and they allow an overdraft, any other payments are put on hold until you pay that overdraft. And you have to pay that exact $2.07 overdraft before anything else can be put on there.
And I think you have to pay it in person too.
And you can't pay $2.07 online. Even if you could, it'd be, please take 24 hours. You can't pay minimum of $10. So basically, I have an ineffective use of card. Like, it would be better for them yesterday to just not let me use my card on the bus and use cash only. But instead, they allow you to put this card into a useless state. So now I'm like scraping around for change.
Not only that, to go and reactivate your card, you have to take the bus, go downtown,
and go to one of these OC transport places, which are only in, like, they're not in the burbs. They're in like major transport hubs, including downtown or Lincoln Fields, or, you know. Not convenient.
Here's my
places.
Thing with it. It's like, if your card doesn't work, how am I going to get there?
Exactly. So presto. Wow. First of all, you're not presto when it takes 24 hours, but you suck.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I've been with that with that card too. And it's like, shoot. I don't know how much money I've got left on it. It's just, never mind. It's like, so I'll just look it up. It's like, I've got enough to go down, but not enough to come back. I'll just drive instead.
It's a joke. And the guy, the leader of the Presto card, or whatever, is saying, well, this is just like other card systems. This is nothing new. No, it's not. I've stand in a line at Starbucks. I've been like one person ahead of me, and I look, oh, my card's empty on my iPhone. Add $20. Boom, boom. Oh, I'm right in line now. Here's my card. There you go.
That's exactly what they need. Just get an app, because they don't even have an app. Get an app, link up the system. So in the case that, I'm out of money on this bus, okay, I have no problem in stepping off, going to my app, loading up on the spot, then getting on the next one.
Yeah, or at least just process the payment online in a normal fashion.
It's a joke.
It is a complete joke. Yeah. Mm. And then my day just sucked because
it started badly.
It was a booth duty yesterday and today at a convention, and that it was a boring one.
You were not happy.
And then one of the projects I'm working on is falling apart, and I have basically, I'm that guy from Office Space. I have four bosses telling me what to do. I hope no one from work listens to this. If you do, I love you guys, but so you really drive me nuts. No.
Were you not putting the right cover page on your TPS reports? Is that the problem?
I apparently didn't get the memo enough times.
Oh, okay.
PC load letter.
So I could just go ahead and do that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, this is going to be an interesting episode. That's not what I was expecting. There we go. Nice. All right. Well, on that note, I'm really looking forward to hearing your review of the game on Friday.
All right. Here we go. Game on!
Friday, October 25th, was Game 10 of the regular season, with the Ducks visiting the Senators. And Canuck, you're up for the review of this one. This should be good.
That's because I went to the game again. Thanks, Sylvie.
Oh, I was at this game too, wasn't I? It's all a blur. Oh, yeah, that's right. So Sens at the Ducks. You expect me to do a real recap?
No, not Sens at the Ducks.
Ducks at the Sens.
Ducks at Sens.
Yeah. The Ducks had played the day before. Where? Was it Montreal?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're getting them on the back. And I believe they started their backup goalie here too, right?
Yep.
So it's a sure lock,
third
right?
Third goalie, actually.
Yeah, his first NHL game ever?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't even remember the score now. Honestly, I don't have a summary prepared for this.
Oh, okay then.
We lost.
It was a very annoying game, according to most Senators fans. Exactly. We lost against a backup goalie or a third string goalie who was playing his first game in the NHL. Team was on 24 hours rest. Third game in 4 nights. And we still lost. Okay, so we can move on from there, I guess.
I tell you, Chris Neal got a penalty. Zbag got a goal in this one. That's right. I wanted to talk about this game. All right, okay.
Well, go ahead.
One thing about this game, though, because Zbag got the one and only goal. I think this was his first game up, too, wasn't it?
I can't recall, to be honest.
We are so prepared
for
this.
No, it was Chicago. He set up the win. He set up the first goal in Chicago.
Yes. Moving on.
We're trying to forget these games.
Detroit, not Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, but what happened here, though, was Zbad scored. And then right on the next faceoff, Chris Neal took a roughing penalty.
Yes.
Which totally deflated any type of momentum in a 2-1 loss, and that pisses me right off.
Assistant captain, my assistant captain. It's a good thing this is a free podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
You remember the detail that Russell would put into these?
Nah, he was drunk all the time.
True.
Nice. Anything else you want to say about this one?
Quack.
No. Quack.
Well, I agree with Ian Mendez. He basically is tweeting saying, I think we can all agree that this is probably the most important win that the Ducks ever had here at in this arena.
I didn't get that. Oh. What?
I'm presuming it's sarcasm.
Did they not win one? They
must
have won one.
It's sarcasm.
I was going to say they won at least one during the, didn't they win the?
They won game four. Went back home and won the cup.
There you go.
Zoom over my head. All right.
There we go. Can we move on from that one?
Please.
All right. Game 11, because there's such another good game to go to right after this one. Game 11 was the Sharks.
Hey, listeners, remember when you wanted the game recaps to be shorter? There you go.
There you go. Well, I'll try and keep this one fairly short. I do have a few notes for it, but I'll try and keep it fairly short. Game 11. Weirkosh was back in, Greiba was out, Cassian was out, and MacArthur was out with some sort of slight injury that's never been fully, or never been addressed other than just being it was an injury. Nobody ever really knew. So there was a little bit of juggling in the lineup from what was announced during the, from Gord Wilson in the press box during the warm-up. It was, apparently Konecker and Greening were switching back and forth, so sometimes it was McCulloch, Spezza, Konecker, and sometimes it was McCulloch, Spezza, Greening. And then the second line was Greening, Turris, Ryan, or Konecker, Turris, Ryan, whatever.
This is the game versus the Sharks, right?
Yeah.
So this is the Sharks game,
yeah.
Well, first, let's start off, too, because I don't know if you have this written down, but what did the Sharks do the night before?
Yeah.
They were playing...
In Montreal.
Was it... No.
2-0 win to Montreal.
Doesn't matter. They played somewhere, right?
Yes, they played somewhere the night before.
And they're playing a backup goalie, too, right?
Who was in goal? Backup goalie in his first NHL game.
Was that the other Anderson, was it not?
That was Anaheim.
That was Anaheim.
But it's whoever. I forgot the guy's name. I'll look it up real quick. But it doesn't really matter because he looked good. But
it was Statlock.
Statlock, that's it. Statlock. Or Staylock, I think it is.
Staylock, Statlock, something like that.
Statlock!
That was definitely a household name, to be sure. So, yes. He was starting... That was his... hadn't played a minute yet this season. He was a fourth-round pick in 2005. Look at that. It's in my notes if I'd actually looked at them. Who knew? And the Senators... The game started off, and unfortunately, the usual way the Senators have been starting off games these days, 1 minute and 16 seconds in, the young rookie sensation Thomas Hertl, after a puck jumps over Corvo's stick and a bit of a knuckleball backhand gets past Anderson.
I feel like I've seen that before.
It's becoming Hurdle getting a goal common.
In the first minute or less.
Yeah, exactly. Far too common.
Yeah, first 5 minutes has just been ridiculous for this team.
Yeah. Now, this game was on Rogers Sportsnet Sens and TVA Sports Network. So I was watching it through an online feed, and I was actually watching the Comcast Sports Network feed from down in the States. So it was the US feed that I was watching. I have to say, just as an aside, I guess I'm so accustomed to listening to the MSN or Nesson guys, who are such homers for Boston games and Rangers games, that these guys were actually pretty fair and interesting to listen to, because it wasn't all about just their home team. I was impressed with them, to be completely honest.
I don't
honest.
Remember if it was in this game or the LA game when we were down in California, and they put up their play-by-play guys, and they were just extremely intelligent about the game and really knew everything.
That was San Jose.
It was San Jose, yeah, because they did a whole thing on Tyler Kennedy, too.
Ah, okay, cool.
Now it just demolishes a sense.
Well, they were commenting that the Senators were struggling through the first period, except, and the one I noted this down in my notes, because they said, well, there's been one line that's actually been putting consistent pressure on this team, and they've been the only line that seems to get into the Shark zone. And they went on to talk about Mika Zibanejad being the guy who had just been called up. He was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. A lot of hope for this guy. But he was the one who was centering this line that was continually getting the Senators into the Shark zone. They weren't necessarily, you know, getting really great scoring chances, but at least that was the line that was getting them in. And that line was on the ice when they said this, followed by a line change to Pajot, Kondra, and I didn't catch who the third player was on that line change, unfortunately. It was probably Grant, but I didn't see them. And Mathot and Carlson, and 10 seconds later, 2-0 Sharks with the goal by Desjardins. So they go from praising Pajot, Neal, and Smith to going, oh, look, it's a goal with these other guys. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. That's not good. So that was at 6:35. At 11:07, however, the Senators gave fans a glimmer of hope with a beautiful goal from Carlson. It was a huge one-timer after a nice pass from Kyle Turris. The assists were Kyle Turris and Corey Conacher. So it's 2-1 at 11:07. And then we have a really, really ugly play at 18:15 where Wingles gets a shorthanded goal after a bad power play and a bit of a misplay by Anderson. And it's 3-1.
That's the best name in hockey.
Wingles?
Tommy Wingles.
My last note for the period was the last 20 seconds of the game, the puck was shot behind our net, and I didn't write down which defenseman it was, went back to get it and stood there. And normally when a goal, you know, they're standing there, one player will sort of stand in front of the net and wait for them to go. No, Shark came in and took the puck away, and we were basically ended up spending 15 seconds chasing them around our own end because nobody wanted to make a play, figuring the clock would just run out. And that really was a statement that told the tale of most of this game, to me at least, was that the Sharks were taking the play to the Senators. The Senators weren't able to set their own pace and were spending the entire game reacting.
There's they only one act, game this reacting. Season where they did took the game to the opposing team.
Detroit.
And that was Detroit.
Yeah, only one. Only one.
And look what happened.
Yeah, who knew?
I spent $118 in alcohol there, so...
By the way, that goal that I think was the third goal, the one that went in shorthanded against Anderson,
mm-hmm.
It just looked like he gave up on it. I was at the other end of the rink watching it, and I just couldn't believe it.
Like, shit, no, why does he have to be the one that always has to try?
Well, I mean, I get that. That never should have had the attempt, and then never should have had to worry about the second person coming in shorthanded alone. Yeah. But still,
I think that's when you're also trying out Turris on the point.
Just no effort at all to get over. Now I know he jumped one way, and it's I'm not putting that goal on Anderson at all. But I just saw that. It's just like, okay, he's given up. I get it. The defense failed in front of you, but don't give up.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty at all. On to the second period. Quick summary was Spezza gets a tripping penalty that was really Erik Karlsson that committed the infraction at 1:54. In fact, Karlsson actually went to the goaltender and said, he was, you could kind of read his lips and hand his body language saying, no, 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 that was me that did that. It's not him, it was me. But Spezza got sent to the box. Penalty killed off, no major problems. 4:21, San Jose gets a bench minor, too many men in the ice, and during that power play, the Senators gives the Sharks a 3-on-2 shorthanded. Oops. Not good.
We're good like that.
Yeah. At 8 minutes into the period, Neil gets Smith's stick. That's pretty hard to say. Gets Smith's stick to the face and has to go to the dressing room for some repairs. It was a follow through it was more of a backswing, actually, I think it was, rather than the follow through on a shot. But he was gone for most of the second period. At 9:09, Mathot scores, and it's now 3-2. And things are looking better. It's like, okay, maybe they're getting tired. Maybe we can get things going. Let's hope so. 11:16, Corvo hooks Pavelski with the usual deflating post-game penalty. But 9mm gets a shorthanded 2-on-1 during the penalty kill, but Couture gets back to take away the pass, and the shot that McCulloch took was saved. During this period, there were a lot of names floating around on Twitter as people to get rid of. That's when it started, I think, in earnest. I think I saw most of the team named, including people who aren't even here anymore, were what? Well, no, I saw at least one, or sorry, at least two mentions of people saying, well, we need to get rid of DaCosta. You follow this fan, this team very closely. He's gone. He's in Binghamton. But thanks
believe
for
me, he's gone.
Oh, I couldn't believe that. But I mean, I think everybody was named. Every single player was named at one point or another in about 10 or 15 minutes. Okay, we have to get rid of this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. It's just getting quite daft, to be honest.
This game was coached by either one of the bingo ball machines or a magic bullet.
It wasn't good.
It was a disaster.
Late in the period, Pageau, who had been getting very limited ice time, was suddenly out with Corey Conacher and Milan McCulloch.
Yep. I mean, I texted you and I was just like, I think Pageau got benched. These lines did not make any sense.
Yeah. Well, there was certainly some juggling going on. I don't know whether that was just because Neil was out or just because it was the let's try anything. You know, let's put everybody's name in a Scrabble bag. Like, put their name on a Scrabble tile, put them in a bag, pull it out, and see what happens.
Well,
I saw Spezza with Grant and Condra.
Yeah.
That almost looks like these guys are centers.
It's a disaster. Yeah. No, yeah. That was a line.
Didn't that come out in the post-game interview that Coach McLean said, well, I heard somebody up in the 300 yelling, do something. So I juggled it up.
It was bad. On to the third period. Let's get through this quickly. Not too much to talk about. Yeah, the Shepherd scores at 1:29. Pavelski scores at 7:59. And on the Pavelski goal, there was a tweet from a local guy and former Ottawa Senator Jamie Baker, who's now the color guy for the Sharks radio broadcast. And his tweet was, the fifth goal was brilliant. This team is winning races, establishing body position, winning battles, and willing their way. And I'd say that sums up this entire game rather well. They were winning the races. They were establishing body position. They were winning battles. They were willing their way, and they won, pure and simple.
No fight against them either.
Not good. Slightly humorous moment at 13:17 of the game where Spezza slashes Matt Irwin's stick in half, and Irwin gets a penalty for playing with a broken stick.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
What? Okay, sure. Let's go with that. Face-offs in this game, the Senators were 29 and the Sharks were 34. The bright spot was Zach Smith, who was 5-3. Spezza was 9-9. John Gabriel Pageau was 0-3.
I'm trying to find a shot count. Do you guys have a shot count on here?
Shot count was the Sharks 29 and the Senators 40.
Okay. I left this game
Corsi,
early.
Anaheim? Yeah, that one.
I don't have that one.
We left this game early.
Yeah.
Beat the rush. Rush to beat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a whole lot of notes about this game, but I don't think much of it needs to be said, to be honest. It was bad. It was a bad start. And there was an interesting press conference on Monday. Actually, we'll get to that after. Let's get through the last game summary, and then we can go back and talk about stuff about the team as a whole. Yeah. I wrote some notes from the press conference that Coach McLean had on Monday. I can go through those very, very quickly. Some of them are just stuff. I mean, it was all stuff we already know. The one thing that I thought was interesting at the time, before we saw the game against Chicago, was that he was putting Spezza and Ryan back together because he really wants to try and get some sparks in that pairing, not just in the Torres and Bobby Ryan pairing. And that he thought the most consistent players so far this year had been Zach Smith, Robin Leonard, and Craig Anderson. Because Zach Smith is, I think, the best faceoff guy on this team so far this year. And is he scoring? No. But he really likes his play. And actually, there was an interview today on the radio where Brian Murray was quoted as saying that the only player he's had inquiries about so far has been Zach Smith, which I thought was interesting. So teams
I disagree.
Are looking for
I don't
Zach
think
Smith.
Those guys have been the most consistent. I mean,
well, they're
Robin
not scoring,
Leonard
but they're
had
also,
some bad
they're
ones
also not
Edmonton.
At minus.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's game 11. Game 12. That's,
Kyle Turris would be more consistent in my books, but whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just trying to say that so they can actually move him. But
Clark
we need a left shot center. Absolutely need a left shot center. It's him and Grant, and I don't think Grant's going to be here much longer. And if he is, he's just not in the same role. Anyways, Sens at Hawks. So luckily for Ottawa, Chicago's played the night before, and they're starting the backup.
Woohoo!
Man.
Yeah, that's worked well.
Yeah, take advantage. Anyway, so Sens start with the Neal line again. Now, this is a part that really bothers me. I don't mind when you do it at home because that's a shutdown line. But when you're away, you always go top line. Always, always, always. Because what happens is Chicago just sees that lineup and goes, all right, Taves, go. So you're just going to get outmatched right away when you're doing things like that. Anyway, so the Sens finally survived the first 5 minutes of the game, yet get scored on at the 6:54 on the penalty kill with Chris Neal in the box. In the last minute, a big save by Andy turns into an offensive rush for Ryan, who gains his own, and Milo buries it home. Milan showing how to be pre-pesky. And then he just kind of falls apart from there. Second period, early power play. MacArthur rushes back into the zone and a dig play in the crease for Turris's goal. All the work goes to MacArthur on that one. Hossa quickly ties it up and has a fancy little fist pump too, which I kind of liked. Ryan with a fandango play goes back to the point and Corvo with the rocket in the traffic, 3-2 Sens.
That was a beautiful dangle that was to get
that
through.
It really was. Yeah, that was Sens. actually, on this play, one thing I noticed is the big three are put back together on that play. Zibanejad gets an insurance goal with some nice hands to beat Happy Bullen, and Crawford comes into the net. This is the point where I just go, oh, no. Anderson gets run over by McCulloch and Taves puts it in the empty net, followed by a quick, weak call on Grant. And that opens up the game a lot. Crawford is tested shorthanded as Milan almost gets another one. Period's over now, and I need a Xanax. Possibly the most exciting period of the year up to now. Third period's when the wheels really fall off. It opens up with Oduya with the perfect tap pass to Taves. Wow, that's hard. Who one times a pass Anderson on a cross crease play. Connacher just missed it on the next play with a big save by Crawford. Taves finishes the hat trick with a big bing bing bang play where all the Sens missed their coverage. To be honest, a hell of a play for Chicago on that one. That really was a good one. Shaw takes a 2-goal lead, but Smith gets it back. Time runs out as Neal's on the ice with 2:30 left, and he turns it over twice at the blue line that leaves the play in the defensive end. Game over.
Yeah.
And then?
And no and then.
Okay. There's no and then. It was an exciting game. And I mean, I have to give the Blackhawks full credit. They are, I watched them in the playoffs last year, but I was watching a lot of teams in the playoffs last year. So until it got to the final where you have two really, really good teams and you're watching both of them, this was the first chance I'd had in quite some time to actually watch the Blackhawks. And they're damn good. I mean, I know that they're the champions, but wow, that team not only has a ton of talent.
It's the elite being the elite.
They also play together very, very well. And they've been together, most of them have been together for several years to help build that ongoing chemistry. Exactly. So
I think I mentioned it on the power plant. I think this is actually just one of their lines. When you've got Taves, Kane, Hossa, and I think it was a 4-on-3 with Duncan Keith on the back end, make it a 5-on-4, out come the Seabrooks. Like, Jesus.
Well, that's 5 Olympians.
Yeah.
All 5 of them will be gone. There you go. They'll be on different teams. Oh. But I can't see why all 5 of those guys wouldn't be in the Olympics or an all-star game or whatever.
So why can't we get guys like that on? Well, I guess we do.
You know what? After the Sharks game, I was really mad. I was mad after the Ducks game. I was mad after the Sharks game. Really frustrated with the team. Really hard to find a positive. Really kind of hard to find anything exciting to cheer about. And I didn't get to watch
the Chicago game.
So I watched the Chicago. Sorry, I wasn't watching the Chicago game. Not too much of it because I was busy. I had it on in the background in the TV, but I was busy fixing home internet. And I think I got to sit down and watch like the last 10 minutes or less and just watching the whole thing unfold. You know, I knew they blew a 2-goal lead and just watch it go away. And at that point, there was just the emotions was gone. It was just. Just watching this and kind of feeling empty. And you know what? I'm starting up the tank.
We don't have to pick, though.
Oh, that's right. The tank doesn't work. There's no pick.
I think if you'd been watching the whole game, did the
sneeze, nice,
no. If you'd been watching the whole game, I don't think you'd be that that you'd be quite that down. Did they lose the game? Yes, but they also lost it to the defending Stanley Cup champions, and they played. I mean, it was a really exciting game to watch, where they were. I mean, quite frankly, I thought they were playing up to the level of Chicago for an awful lot of it. It was back and forth. There were mistakes being made by both teams because both teams were going at it so hard. But it was all offense. It
like
was 80s
you said
hockey.
About the Sharks game, the Chicago Blackhawks won the battles. They had the better desire to win, and they ran with it in the end. They just beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, I know. Okay, do you expect to win a game against Chicago if it was game one? No. But it's just, that's why I say it. That's why I wasn't too down after this, but just kind of realizing that we are a bubble team at best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When at the start of the year, when everyone said that Ottawa was third in the conference or whatever it is now, not a chance.
October is over now. All the games in October are done. We're below 500. We are not in the playoffs right now. Teams around us in our division are winning when we're losing. We are falling far behind. It's going to be a tough ride now just to get in the playoffs. Excuse me.
As a counterpoint to that, what's our record against Eastern teams?
Yeah, and that's actually where I was going to go with it because the team's got 6 losses. If you're going to say, okay, in 6 losses, you lost 2 to the Ducks, 2 to the Sharks, 1 to Chicago.
And 1 to LA.
That was an overtime one.
Okay. Yeah,
so that, it'd be like, wow, those are good teams. I think, and if you look at the schedule and the calendar.
And one to Edmonton. One really,
sorry?
And one to Edmonton.
The Edmonton one is the one that really drives me nuts.
Yes.
If that was a win, I think that my attitude would be a lot more different. Now I'm just very, very concerned.
We have Islanders and the Stars coming up.
Islanders are just loaded up.
Yeah.
Dallas, I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm looking at it that our record against the East is 3-0-1.
Okay, so we played Buffalo, which is the worst team in the league. New Jersey, who's the second worst team. And lost to the Leafs in a shootout. Are you proud of that record?
Nope, just pointing it out that the teams that will be playing more, our record against them isn't nearly as bad. And we've also, and as you already said, we've been playing basically the top teams in the West.
And the worst team in the West and lost to them. And we played the two worst teams. It's a small sample size. Yes, you're right, because the game, especially games against Buffalo, we got to get those points, especially because it's a division rival too. I'm pretty sure they've given up for the year already.
Given the trade they made, which we'll talk about in a minute or two. Yeah.
I'm concerned. I do have significant concerns for this team.
They are in a slump. There's no way around it. But, silver lining moment, at least they're having the slump in October and not in March or April.
Yeah, very true.
The bird lining is that trade actually works out for us now.
Yeah, this team tanks it during the year. You think Ryan really wants to re-sign here?
Well, he has 2 years, but yeah.
Sure hope McCulloch doesn't.
Oh, jeez.
Well, he may want to. It's whether Brian Murray decides he wants to sign him or not.
Give you a $3 million answer. Anyway.
We'll see. Long way to go. Just to backtrack just a little bit, on Monday, which was after the Sharks game and before the Blackhawks game, there was a closed-door player meeting before the practice. And there were a couple of interesting comments that came out from player interviews after practice when they came out to meet the media about that meeting from the players as well as from Coach McLean. From Spezza, he said that he called the players-only meeting because guys were frustrated, himself included, and that he had spoken with Coach McLean beforehand. But I think the quote that people were talking about the most, and I think, Canuck, you wanted to get in on this one, was that Eric Carlson was saying that it's really hard to live up to media expectations. What he was saying was, you guys have talked about me like I'm sort of deleted expletive God or something. But he went on to admit, though, that he raised the bar on himself by winning a Norris Trophy at 21. The one thing that was in some discussion after that, the one thing that was pointed out that the pace that he's at right now, he's on pace for another 70-point season. Yeah. So yes, he's struggling. He's struggling defensively, to be sure, and he's a big focus because the whole team is struggling. Is he 100% recovered? I don't believe he is. I think he's certainly better now.
He doesn't recovered. Carry the play out anymore.
No. I think his play now is better than it was in game one of the season. His play is reminding me of him 3 years ago, a little bit before he went down to Binghamton. He's getting up to the point where he was when he came back.
He had zero experience, though.
But I mean, it's the same. He had no experience, absolutely. But it looks like the same sort of struggles that he's having for a different reason.
It's a major restart for him, right? Because he's got to get his body back in tune with it. But Eric, I know that you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, obviously.
So don't worry about it. We're not calling you a god. An apostle isn't a god. It's
a follower.
You guys would know this better. What is it's like a messenger of God?
Follower
of God.
Some would go on to say he's the son. So I mean, I guess he is. He does have that deity attribute, but clearly he's a listener. If he's bringing that up,
he's not a god. He might be a demigod or something like that.
An heir apparent.
Yes.
Yes.
Possibly. So it's not that much pressure on you.
Not yet, at least. That'll come in another year after you get your next Norris Trophy.
No, I haven't looked around the league. I don't know what else is out there, but geez, if we get this record turned around, could very well possibly yet. I think McLean's shot himself for a chance at Coach of the Year already, though. But whatever. He really doesn't care about that. It's a rebuild anyways, right?
Year three of a rebuild.
We're
going to
start competing next year.
It's okay. Anyway. We got 3 first-round picks, so it's all good.
Don't start that one. It's going to get angry. The defenseman that's really driving me nuts, though, is Jared Gallen.
I was wondering where you were going with this, because I'm finding him frustrating, but I'm also thinking that I'm also kind of feeling sorry for him, because it almost looks to me like he... Compared to the way he was playing 2 seasons ago when he played the full season before he got hurt, he almost looks like he hasn't recovered enough yet. He looks better than he did in the spring when he came back and played way too early and was struggling really, really hard. But he just doesn't seem to have, he doesn't seem to have the pace. Like he's not, it's not just a physical thing. It's a mental thing. Like he's almost not thinking fast enough.
Almost like he missed a few games of preseason.
No, that's inconsequential at this point. Inconsequential. But it's, for me, I'm looking at it, it's like, is it just that he doesn't have the skill? Because he's just beat all the time. He fumbles a puck or he gets beat.
I think he has the skill. I think he's just working himself back into mental and physical shape.
Yeah.
I think it's both sides of that sword is one of the main, I think his physical side may actually be further ahead from his mental side, that he's still working himself back into that space. Because we know he can do it, but he's just not getting there. He's not at that. He's not in that zone yet, is what I would think it would be. And when you look at the defense that we have, they're really, like, he just passed 100 games played in the league. Gryba and Wierkosz aren't even there yet. So, I mean, when you're looking at the two most experienced players being...
Well, Corvo.
Phillips yeah. and Corvo. Okay, Phillips. Okay,
well,
Corvo.
That'd be it, right? Yeah.
It is.
Then you go to Carlson?
And then Mathot. But I mean, Carlson and Mathot are around the 300 game, I think, level. 250, somewhere in there. So okay. There's a big drop.
So your 1-2 is experienced and your 5-7 is experienced.
Yeah.
How awesome is that? That's where a hole needs to be filled. Keith Yandel. But, well, we can't afford him anyways. But.
Yandel for McCulloch.
Oh.
Never get that trade, mate.
You would never get that trade. He's got 3 years left. Yeah.
For Yandel, you're giving up.
Okay, giving up. We'll give you DaCosta, you know, too.
People are, and forget Zach Smith, because I don't think people are asking about Zach Smith. I think they're asking about Corey Conacher.
Really?
If we could have Corey, if we could have Yandel for Corey Conacher, bye. In a nanosecond, I'd make that trade.
No, they'll want more than Corey Conacher.
Exactly. They'll want Conacher and probably
DaCosta.
Take Milo. Okay. Take Milo.
No, I was going to say they'll probably want a defenseman to go back with them, and whether they insist on it being
tons,
unless they say they want Cody Ceci. They want a defensive prospect. They want a forward prospect, and they'll probably want a pick as well.
Phoenix is also into it, so they would want NHL-ready guys right now, which is why you'd have to give up a guy like Conacher.
Or Zibanejad. I think they'd probably go for a little
Zibanejad
higher.
Zibanejad is untouchable.
But that's, it's untouchable from our perspective, but that may be what they're looking for. They're looking for a higher quality player than Conacher.
What would Melnick do?
Yeah, Nash for Kadri, right?
What Melnick should do is keep quiet and let Brian Murray take care of this, which is his job.
Again, what would Melnick do?
I don't think that's physically possible.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. There's been some talk about we talked in our last episode about the changes in the in-game experience, and we all seem to agree that the biggest problem right now is the play of the team isn't terribly exciting. And a home record of 1-4 doesn't help that.
Yeah, you think?
And this leads to my next one, which is why I think these two things are combining as to why we haven't had a home sellout yet.
Oh, maybe the schedule.
Yeah, they've been kind of pressed
three
together.
Three afternoon games? Come on. And yes, I'm lumping in the 5 p.m. start as an afternoon game. I know that's kind of early evening, maybe, but...
Late afternoon, whatever.
Well, yeah. And I'm kind of feeling this for this week right now, but when you look at the four games that have passed, it's Thursday, Saturday, then Friday, Sunday. So when you have people that are like, you know what, I'll catch a game a week. Well, now they got to pick between two. It's probably a little bit normal with the regular schedule. I know we've been away from that again. But again, like I'm going Friday, Sunday again. So my buddy can't go on Friday because like he's got a family to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least so, Friday is 7:30. Like Friday night, okay, it's an evening. You've taken care of your responsibilities. You're checked out from the work.
But you work in Canada. Now with the traffic, I got to gun it. And I barely make it.
Well, yeah, no, I hear you. I wasn't thinking so much the traffic, but I'm thinking the mental the level of excitement you're going to be is going to be a lot different on Friday night than, oh, Sunday at 1 o'clock against the Stars.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we've brought this up a couple of times. I mean, it's great for me bringing my kids, but I don't know. We look around and we're all like, I'm not into this yet. Okay, something finally happens in the game. Maybe I'll be drawn in, but.
And it's not like you're spending like a lot on booze at the concessions either, right? Because your little guy just loves refilling that popcorn box.
Yeah, you get the big popcorn. I can't do that now because I think
you actually brought that from the last game too.
Yeah. No, you only allowed one refill. And
it's one?
Yeah, they mark it.
Oh.
And now I think I'm not going to do that anymore because you got a little sick last time. So
I was going to say, if you and your young lad were able to eat two of those things of popcorn and still wanted more, I'd be checking you out for a tapeworm.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of popcorn.
It's probably like he just ate a whole sheet of drywall, to be honest.
Yeah, really. It's true.
Exactly.
Flavored drywall. Hmm. It's blue.
Oh. I've been watching Twitter a little bit on and off in the last little while, and I mentioned earlier about some of the crazy things, and it was in the Sharks game where, you know, this person needs to be going, and this person needs to be going, and this person going.
Chris Neal needs his A ripped off his shirt.
I saw something more absurd than that. Ow. That's really loud. It may not be for our listeners, but that's really loud for us.
Do you want me to do it again?
No, thank you. Once is more than plenty. The most absurd thing I've seen so far. And this was in game, I guess it was during game 10 against the Ducks. Well, somebody said, we need to fire Paul McLean because obviously it's not working. We need a new coach. And I forgot to write down who said that, unfortunately. So whoever said it, you get a get out of jail free card. I can honestly say that that's probably the most absurd thing I've seen said about this team so far this year.
I'm going to attribute that one to Sens Adnan or Carson. That's the kind of stuff they do. No, I'm just kidding.
You're not wrong.
I'm probably not wrong.
I don't think it was either of them. I would have remembered that name. It was. I'm not sure if I even recognize. I don't remember recognizing the name. Going, oh, okay, well, no, it's just a troll, whatever.
We need some type of shakeup. Absolutely, some type of shakeup. Either bring it through.
I have an idea. What if we put Neil out with a couple of minutes left to go?
No,
in the game?
You could just stop there. Put Neil out. No, carry on.
You know what? We harp
on. If you do that, who are you bringing in?
No. You don't pull him out of the lineup.
We harp on Neil.
Recognize that, okay, because we always say that, well, especially against that San Jose game, the lineups were just a disaster. You got to pick something and stick with it because these guys are not going to run chemistry. And right now, your only elevator boy should be Colin Greening. If you really want a second one, it's Conacher. Those two guys can run up and down the lineup wherever they need to be, and they're fine. And I really, really like that about both of them.
And that's the same thought I was having in the Sharks game. I actually called it. I called it in my own head. We're Corey Klustening this lineup, where every line that's going out is a random selection of players. You, and you go. And I was watching it, going, these guys don't play together on a regular basis. This
is like picking teams in science class, like just awful.
Winning your or,
yeah.
I mean, really?
You had a good shift. You three can stay together. No, yeah. Well, it just seemed a little strange, but you know, maybe there is method to this madness, but it certainly isn't coming. The method doesn't seem to be working. That's all I'm going to say.
Here's the thought. Maybe he's doing this intentionally, kind of, you know, get them all kind of off their feet, out of the system.
He wants to go back to Detroit too then?
Guess the rest. No. Get the rest of the league kind of like underdogging us. And then now in November, he's going to, all right, let's go.
I friggin' hope so, because this is the first time in 3 years that I really, really question
what do they call that in a fight? A rope-a-dope or something? You just kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
dogfight for sure.
But I don't know. Like, if you want the lineups in the way that you're doing it with McCulloch, Spezza, Conacher, MacArthur, Turris, Ryan, and then you're calling the Greening, Smith, Neil line the third line with right now Grant, Pageau in and out, and Condra is a fourth. To be honest with you, flip the third and fourth line because those guys don't need to play that much. And Cassian's got to play at some point.
Well, I actually like
some ice time.
I like the idea of having Zibanejad and Smith playing together.
I totally forgot about Zibanejad. Yeah.
Zibanejad, Smith, Neil, because you have two centers. It's a defensive line, but you have two centers.
Sorry, go again. Zibanejad, Smith, Neil?
Smith, Neil. Two centers, both of whom are pretty good at winning faceoffs. So if you're in the defensive zone, that's who I would want out there. It's also the line I would want out there right after we score a goal.
Okay, they put that line out. Zibanejad was flying around everywhere, had a perfect pass down the center ice right in front of the net, and he didn't have the wingers to play with. You need better speed and skill. Maybe put a Konecker with him then. And toss Greening up on the top line to fill up, because that's what he does.
What about Zibanejad and Pageau?
Well, you can also put Zibanejad into a more defensive role. He's responsible with it. He doesn't have to play an offensive role all the time. He can. But
if we can roll three great offensive lines and one shutdown line, or if you want to call it the energy line with the Smith line, fantastic.
Yeah.
That will look beautiful. And just stop moving them around. But another thing I'm going to say is, if you're not going to put Ryan on the first line, and you've traded Silfverberg, who was a second line player, Nason, who is probably going to be a second line player, and a draft pick, which might be a second line player, you traded a full second line for one second line guy. And that's a fail. He's got to be able to work out, and I don't know why they didn't give it more time with Spezza and just do an offensive overload. Stop putting Chris Neal out on the ice when you've got 2 minutes left. Try to win the game.
I agree to a certain extent, but I'd rather see Bobby Ryan stay with Kyle Turris right now, because that's
just
working.
It's working. Yeah.
And putting MacArthur in with the two of them is working really, really well.
Yeah. I wish he'd score one. He really needs to get one.
He needs to get one. He's doing absolutely everything but getting a goal. And yeah. I was looking back at him going, oh, I'm not really sure about this guy, but he's got quite a number of assists. He's a plus player.
That play in the Chicago game was something else.
Nuts. Incredible. Yeah. And I am certainly warming to him. When he doesn't have a beard, do you find he looks like Nick Foligno? Seriously.
Don't tell anyone that. Now he's going to get GI interference.
You know, the thing with Neil, we've harped on him, and we're kind of silently harping on him, or at least Pan is.
Don't be wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I get frustrated when I see him out at the end of the game, but there's two things I'll say about Neil. One is that every time he's introduced with the player introductions, he's one of the more louder reactions you get from the fan base. It takes like Erik Karlsson or Spezza to get just as loud. Like, he's louder than Phillips. He's very well liked by the fan base. And you got to wonder if a coach is throwing him out there because of the letter he's wearing. And the fact that at least he looks like he's trying out there. Trouble is, he's trying too much. He's making stupid decisions and things, but it's just sort of like, you know what? He's the assistant captain. He's been working. I'm going to put him out.
I was going to say he's working, so that's why he's getting ice time. As if nothing else, not all of his work is working, and I agree with that. But I think you're right. Here's a demonstration of what you should all be doing. Is he doing it right 100% of the time? No, nobody is. But he's never, he's never dogging it on the way back. He's never just sort of mailing it in, or whatever, you know, cliche you'd like to use.
Always looking for a fight to pick in the last minute.
Yeah, that's got to go. But I think that may be more of a frustration thing than anything, which, you know, he can rein
that
in.
This is a team sport.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the
team
isn't around.
Listeners, let's do an email blitz here. Email us about what your thoughts about Chris Neal are. I'm not going to tweet this one either. I'd rather just have the listeners get back to us. So email the show and let us know what you think about Chris Neal.
The email address is podcast@senscallups.com. Yeah, well, we could do a complete segment on Chris Neal on our next episode. I'm interested to see what people think.
Maybe we could have him on.
That'd be nice. We'll work on that. We'll work on that. Now, before we go on to the rest of the league, we have an interview, which I was very much looking forward to. We have Grady Wittenberg, the voice of the Binghamton Senators, on the radio. Can you plug that one in for us?
Peterson jammed to the glass. CeCe with some room pulls up. Shooting, he scores! Cody CeCe stops on a dime and flips it past the glove hand of Cedric Desjardins. Binghamton's only lead of the night
On the line with us tonight, we have the voice of the Binghamton Senators, Grady Wittenberg. Grady, welcome to the Sens Call-Ups.
I appreciate the invite to be on the show, guys. I've heard a lot about it, and a lot of fans down here in Binghamton actually pick up on it, so it's known across the borders.
Wow.
Yeah, he got stunned there.
I thought there were like four people that downloaded it, and that's like us and Puddle Duck. Good to hear.
So we had a few questions for you, Grady. One big topic lately here in Ottawa is Mika Zibanejad. And of course, the city was a bit surprised to see him sent down and begin in Binghamton. He's since been called up and seems to be contributing quite well. We had a little bit of a funny Free Mika campaign we were doing while he had his time in the minors. But Derek Grant has also been a bit of a surprise call up. And I guess the kind of question is, for Derek Grant, how's his play been kind of last year and to start this one? What we've noticed here so far is he's very effective on the penalty kill and seems to be pretty good on the faceoffs.
Well, yeah, my understanding when he got called up was kind of looking for someone to be able to step into the faceoff circle and certainly not dominate. And he's still a young player, just a third-year pro and primarily with Binghamton for those three seasons. And it's been good to see when I've been able to watch the games to see him contribute. It seems like he's getting a regular shift, and his guys really worked hard. And it's kind of funny how fans down here in Binghamton will sometimes view players, because the perspective down here is it's about winning down here. And I'm not towing a company line. I just understand where most National Hockey League clubs come from. It's about winning a Stanley Cup. And Binghamton is a part of that piece of the puzzle. So when Ottawa doesn't go out during the summertime and sign some AHL veterans for the Binghamton club down here, fans are all up in arms and, oh, great, we're stuck with Derek Grant again this year. We're stuck with this guy. We're stuck with that guy. They're never going to amount to anything. You know, we get garbage. And so it's kind of neat from my perspective to see a player like Derek Grant play the way he has the last couple of years. Outstanding penalty killer. He led the American Hockey League in shorthanded goals a year ago with five. He's got two already this season down here, and Binghamton leading the league in that department once again in the early stages of this season. But I think at the time of his call-up, it was really a situation where they were looking for someone that could come up and win faceoffs on a consistent basis. The sentiment up there seemed to struggle a little bit with that. So Derek called upon, and I think so far he's taken advantage of this call-up. And like you said, he was actually called up before Mika, though Mika joined him a very short time later, and we were kind of waiting down here in Binghamton. Does that mean we might get the return of Jean-Gabriel Pageot down here, who the little bit of the shine has been taken off of his star this season when he was the toast of the town last year after his call-up in the lockout shortened season? But so far we haven't seen anybody down here, so that must mean, you know, three guys that two out of the three spending significant time in Binghamton, they're still making contributions up top, which is great to see from our perspective.
Now, another thing, and one of the big strengths organizationally, is the strength and depth that we have in goaltending. This year, Binghamton's got a couple of guys, and the record's been pretty strong up to now with a 5-3 record to start off this season. Now, in regards to the guys that you've got, how would we look in the case that either Anderson or Leonard got injured?
Well, most definitely that would be Nate Lawson getting the call up. So far, we've only had one of the two guys that I would term the backups play in Binghamton. Binghamton didn't have a camp this year. Ottawa had a pretty aggressive exhibition schedule. They had eight games, including that split squad game against the New York Islanders to close out the preseason. That was Sunday before the start of the regular season, both for the NHL and the AHL. So we basically had 4 days of preparation down here. Nate Lawson, number one goaltender heading into the season, after he was kind of the forgotten man last year with a lockout taking place to kick things off. And we had both Robin Leonard and Ben Bishop down here, and neither one were going to give up time and net to Nate. But Lawson, an AHL veteran, he has stepped in and really has provided some stability between the pipes. The question mark is going to be, you know, if, and not so much if, but when an injury, a little bit of a dinged up goaltender, either Craig Anderson or Robin Leonard up top, does occur, you know, Nate Lawson's going to get the call. Then how does that leave Binghamton? Right now, Andrew Hammond, I think the verdict is still out on him. He's played two games and he's given up, I take that back, he's played three games and he's given up five goals in two of those three games, and was in net for a loss last Saturday night against the Syracuse Crunch. So I think fans are a little bit leery of what we have down here as far as a backup. The fans already down here clamoring for the Beast Sens to take a look at Scott Grenham, who is currently playing with the ECHL affiliate just down the road in Elmira with the Jackals. He came up with 46 saves in his season debut last Saturday in Elmira's first win of the season down in Reading. So that certainly throws a little bit of fuel onto the fire as to how fans view things down here in Binghamton. We're in great hands right now with Nate Lawson. Still waiting to see, we hope, the real Andrew Hammond that can provide a little bit more stability. Right now, he really looks to be overplaying the puck and getting caught out of position. He's a bit of an older rookie. He was a U.S. collegiate player, so you're talking a rookie in the AHL pro hockey that's, I think, about 25 years old. So he's not your typical young guy coming out of junior hockey in his 20 or early 20s. So it's a situation down here where if somebody does get hurt up top, we may be pressing the panic button. But as far as who you guys would see if someone gets hurt, Nate Lawson would be the man to come up and back up top in Ottawa.
Excellent. I've been a fan of junior hockey for years. I grew up watching the 67s, and I try and keep an eye on ex-67s who are making their way into the pro ranks in one form or another, and I'm especially those who are in the Ottawa Senators system. I'm very pleased that Corey Cowick made the jump from Elmira to Binghamton last year and that he stayed. How is he playing so far this year, as well as other ex-67s, Shane Prince and Cody Ceci?
Well, first of all, addressing Corey Cowick, he made such huge strides last year, and you're right, he was a guy that was kind of bouncing back and forth. He'd get maybe a one- or two-game call-up if we needed a body, and then he would get sent back to Elmira, where he did excel down there. But obviously, every player wants to, they feel like they belong at the next highest level, no matter where they're at. They're never satisfied until you get to the big club, which is a good thing. It certainly keeps the motivation up. And Cowick is such a hard worker, and he's just such a great guy. I don't know how often you guys, if at all, have an opportunity to meet some of the players. And like you say, you follow junior hockey, so I don't know what the access to the players is under those circumstances. But just a great kid to be around, always positive. And I remember talking to him last year and having an on-air interview when, you could tell he was pretty locked in. It was on the fourth line in Binghamton, but he was locked in. And I called him, and I apologize for calling him that, but when you're on the fourth line, you're kind of a role player. You're looking at sometimes as that energy guy. You can go out and maybe take a face-off, go out and kill some penalties if it's one of those games where the PK unit's getting bogged down and you're not one of the top penalty killers out there. But he's turned into one of those guys down here in Binghamton and always positive. And I was talking with head coach Luke Richardson about him last week prior to one of our contests. Both him and Wacy Hamilton, guys that, again, our fans kind of want to cast on the scrap heap sometimes and say, oh, great, we're stuck with players like this. But every team needs the foot soldiers, and that's what they've been. And Coach Richardson was just really impressed with the way both of those players had played so far this season and contributing to Binghamton's start out of the gate, winning 5 of their first 8 contests. As far as you mentioned, Cody Ceci and Shane Prince. Princey, early on, I think from all indications, he had a pretty good camp in Ottawa, both the rookie camp and going into the main camp with Ottawa, and maybe was a little bit disappointed. Maybe he felt he should have stuck. Just a second-year pro, and he's a guy, he's all business when you get on the ice, but I think maybe a little bit of that competitive fire may have been missing when the season started, and as a result, he was actually a healthy scratch for a couple of games, and fans were questioning me on Twitter and Facebook saying, what's the deal with him? Is he injured? I said, no, it's a coach's decision, and I think Luke Richardson just trying to light a little bit of a fire under him because we saw what he could do last year coming in as a rookie in the American Hockey League, not the easiest thing to do, and he wasn't even getting consistent ice time to start last year. He wasn't even in the lineup most nights in the first probably 10 to 12 game segment. And then once he got in there, he really showed what he could do. And he finished with 18 goals a season ago, a rookie in pro hockey. And I think he's not quite, I guess maybe early on here, he's on that pace, but it's such a small sample size so far. But I think sitting out those 2 games as a healthy scratch kind of opened his eyes up a little bit. And we've seen a little bit more determination in his play since being reinserted into the lineup once again. He hasn't been a healthy scratch since that time. So I think the message was delivered and the message kind of sunk in for Princey. And Cody Ceci, exciting player down here, obviously a little bit of an accent on the offensive side of the game, struggled at times defensively. And again, you're talking a first-year player, and probably goaltending is the most difficult position when you move from one level to the next as far as keeping up with the speed of the game, the skill of the offensive attacks that you'll be facing, second most difficult, or maybe 1A and 1B, is being a young blue liner. Right now, the good thing for him is he is paired with the team's number one defenseman, Mark Borowiecki, and you couldn't, even though for a young guy, Boro is just a third-year pro himself, but for a youngster like CeCe, you certainly couldn't be asked to have been paired with a partner that's going to do more for you, especially when you talk about covering for those rookie mistakes and kind of a pseudo-veteran, I'll call Boro, although he is the senior member of the defensive core, with the exception of Tyler Eckford, who's been a little bit in and out of the lineup so far this season. The Boro-CeCe combo is certainly Binghamton's number one pair back in the blue line.
Very good. Now, one of the rookies that Ottawa fans have been paying attention to really since before the season start is Mark Stone. He had a very successful rookie tournament, and I guess at the end of training camp, I believe the message from the organization up here was that he was going to begin in the minors and do some conditioning and get some time played down there. And unfortunately, he got the injury bug. And I guess we really haven't heard too much from him lately. Curious, what is the latest with Mark Stone? Is any news down there on him?
He is. He has been skating for the last week and a half. I was in Binghamton yesterday and watched practice. He didn't have the down here in Binghamton, the orange jersey, which I think is the no contact jersey. He was the only one that had that on during the game day skates this past weekend. Yesterday he had a maroon jersey, and I do apologize. I didn't jot my notes down or open them up here. I left them in the office as far as who he was skating with. It looked like he was on a line taking regular drills. There wasn't much contest in the practice. I'm talking with head coach Luke Richardson last week. He indicated that it was going to be a couple of more weeks before he got back into the lineup. But it looks, if I'm to read practice the way I did yesterday, and we'll know more coming up on Friday morning when the team hits the ice in preparation for the road game in Adirondack against the Phantoms, possibly could return, but you haven't heard anything from him because he got injured 6.5 minutes into the season opener back on October 5th, and that was it. It was a very innocent-looking play. Binghamton picking up the puck in their own end, and he just kind of got pinched along the glass the wrong way. The shoulder kind of opened up, and it just kind of tweaked it, and that's all he's played so far this season, was the opening 6.5 minutes of that thrilling overtime victory against the Syracuse Crunch all the way back in early October. And he's just a guy that seemingly cannot catch a break injury-wise. In fact, watching practice yesterday, he was following up on a rebound from a teammate. He ends up shooting the puck into the net, then his teammate low-bridging him, and he tumbled into the end boards right near where I was watching practice, and we all just kind of held our breath and like, oh my goodness, stay on your feet. You can't catch a break injury-wise, Stoner. You gotta get in there. And he showed last year what he could do. I think the biggest knock on him, he's got great, fantastic ice vision. He's got fantastic hands. The question mark on him was his foot speed and his skating mechanics. I think they've done some work with him, not only during the season last year. He's put some work into it in the offseason, and then the staff getting their hands back on him during the rookie camp. And I think he's close, in my estimation, for what that's worth. I think he's close to making that jump. And with that said, you just cross your fingers that he begins to catch a break as far as staying off the injured list.
Now, another guy that we've actually talked a lot about this year was especially the signing of Troy Rutkowski, especially after I think it was with Colorado that didn't work out. So he ended up jumping ship and coming here. Now, recently he got sent down to Elmira, which I was a little bit caught by surprise with the amount of news that we got on it and watching him during the preseason up here. What do you think attributed to that demotion to Elmira?
Well, I think overall this Binghamton defense is so young this season. And when you talk about a third-year guy being the head of your defense, your number one blue liner, Mark Borowiecki, also the team captain down here, it really speaks to the inexperience that we do have. Freddie Clayson had a fantastic rookie season, but still learning the game on this side of the ocean. Mike Sadeo came out of Princeton University, got into a handful of games. He is a project as well, and obviously a first-year pro. And you just take a look at the youthfulness back there. Chris Weidman, a second-year pro. He's out of the U.S. Collegiate Program. Miami Red Hawks is where he came from in the CCHA. All these guys showing a lot of promise, but it's such a green unit back there. And then you throw Troy Rutkowski into the mix as well. I think he's got some good tools, but he's still a player that's going to fill into his body. I think he's about 6'2", but I don't know if he hits 200 pounds. So he's a little bit on the smaller side. at this point of his career, kind of like a Patrick Weerkash when he left Denver and came into the American Hockey League with Binghamton. All these players that you talk about that are under 25 years old, they're still growing into their bodies, and things change so drastically from year to year. When you see these guys play one season, then they come back after a summer away. It's like going back to school and seeing all your friends after summer vacation. Some of them seem to change so drastically, and that's what I've noticed a lot of times when you talk about players at this level and how they grow over the course of time. And Rutkowski being sent down to Elmira may have caught you a little bit by surprise, but just because of the lack of injuries in Binghamton, which is a fantastic thing, knock on wood, and in Ottawa as well, they haven't had to call anybody up defensively so far. Binghamton actually having pretty much two extra defensemen that have also been healthy defensemen throughout this first eight-game segment of the regular season. And Coach Richardson trying to spread some playing time around just felt maybe, you know, giving a concentrated amount of time, knowing that if he put Troy Rutkowski down with the Elmira Jackals last weekend, he was going to see a couple of good games of action and get a lot heavier minutes than he would in Binghamton. That's the only way you're going to improve. You can only learn so much by watching. You got to, some of this, certainly in the AHL level and any level in the minors, it's a trial by fire. You got to get in there. You're going to make mistakes, but you learn from mistakes and you move forward from there. And I think that's part of the process, just kind of getting him more minutes than he would have seen here in Binghamton, because they'll lean pretty heavily on their top two pairings in most cases here in Binghamton. While they like to roll all four lines, the CC and Borowiecki combination along with Wyman and Clayson, they really soak up a majority of the minutes. And then that third pairing is kind of filling in the gaps here and there.
Now that we've had Grant and Zibanejad up so far this year, and given what you were just talking about with the young defensive core, if another call-up is needed, who might we be seeing as far as a forward or a defenseman?
Definitely on defense. I mean, hands down, it would be Mark Borowiecki. I don't think there's really much debate on if something happened up there, he would be the guy that head coach Luke Richardson would be getting the phone call from Brian Murray or Tim Murray from. Up front, I would say Mike Hoffman. And it's kind of funny. Hoff went into, I'm trying to think of which weekend it was. It wasn't this past weekend, but our three-game weekend, 2 weeks removed. He went into the weekend with one assist in the season's first five games. And then Derek Grant got called up. By the end of that weekend, Mika Zibanejad, I think, got the phone call on Monday morning to head up to Ottawa. But during the interim, Mike Hoffman kind of caught fire. He finished with a six-point weekend. He had five goals and one assist. And with that said, a pair of two-goal games, both coming in Binghamton victories against Syracuse and then the overtime game on a Sunday in Bridgeport against the Sound Tigers. And he's a player that they're just kind of, I think everybody's kind of waiting to see, is he going to break through here? Is this going to be the year? He's another one of these guys. He has slowly progressed, and over time, he's become one of the more veteran members of the Binghamton Senators, even though he's just a third-year pro, a former MVP out of the Quebec Major Junior League with the St. John Sea Dogs. And he's a guy, I think that season is MVP year, 86 points, really has not shown that consistency. He's shown the explosiveness, fantastic shot, and really this collective group of forwards down here in Binghamton, really great shots that they have. Stefan DaCosta, who we've seen a little bit of up in Ottawa over the last couple of years. A younger player like Andre Peterson, he's currently on the injured list. Just fantastic shots, really hard pro shots, you might even say NHL shots, but needing to round more aspects of their game into form before they'll get a full-time or at least an extended look up top with Ottawa. But Hoffman's kind of that one that I think both management in Ottawa and certainly fans that have followed him down here in Binghamton just kind of waiting for that breakthrough campaign to see what he can do on a consistent basis. But he's played well as of late, so I would think either him or Stefan DaCosta, who was sent down earlier. The only provision with DaCosta, he's one of those guys that he has to clear waivers. So I think we're kind of fortunate that maybe he fell through the cracks coming down here. If he gets called up again and they try to send him back to Binghamton, who knows? He may get picked up by somebody else. But and speaking of Steph as well, he's come down with a fantastic attitude, and he's been a pretty consistent point producer since his demotion by Ottawa. So it's a pretty good mix down here. I've been really impressed with this group of guys, and you're hard-pressed to find somebody that really doesn't fit in here and doesn't contribute. And that said, they're all trying to kind of vie for that next call-up. But I think right now on the front end, it's Mike Hoffman, and on the back end, it's definitely Captain Mark Borowiecki.
Excellent. Now, we have quite a number of followers in Canada as well as in the U.S., and I know we had one game on TSN 1200 of Binghamton so far this season. Where can people listen to you calling the games, whether on either side of the border, because I know that sometimes it's hard to catch them up here.
Yeah, unfortunately, our webcaster is part of the Clear Channel radio group down here in the States, and they don't allow their signal to cross international borders. So unless you're in the United States, that web stream is not available. Sometimes I have set up what I probably shouldn't use the term, but we're a podcast here. We're not being monitored by the FCC in the United States. I sometimes set up a little feed off of my gear and through my laptop. I did it a handful of times last year for one of the, I think primarily it's a video streaming service, Ustream. And I know I had a couple of other ones that I investigated, but I had popped the feed up once in a while and tried sending that out. And I know I did get some parents that didn't buy the video webcast from AHLLive.com that they were thankful that they were able to listen to the games. So I think when they can't listen, they probably bite the bullet and buy single games, or maybe they even buy the season-long package. But unfortunately, the Clear Channel radio stream doesn't cross borders. But I'll see what I can do this weekend, maybe do a little testing. And if I pick a carrier that's suitable and I can kind of throw the signal out there off of my gear from the press box and get some Canadian interest there, certainly I'll let you guys know about it, and you can be the PR firm for BSense Broadcasting and let people know where they can catch some action in the interim when TSN 1200 isn't carrying the game on a given night.
That job probably doesn't pay either, does it?
It does not. We're all on a volunteer basis here.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Grady, thank you again for your time, as well as your insights into the prospects and minor league organizations of the Senators. All three of us, we certainly hope that the success the Binghamton Senators have had so far this season continue, but we also apologize if Ottawa continues to loot all the good players right when they're needed at Binghamton.
It would not be the first time that's ever happened, trust me. And it won't be the last time I complain about it either. But hey, that's life down here. Like I kind of started off with, all the fans they have a very microscopic viewpoint. It's very narrow and pinpointed, and they want to win down here, which obviously, no matter where you go, no matter what sport it is, local fans want to win. But it's all about winning the cup up in Ottawa. We are a piece of that, but hopefully they don't loot us too badly. I'll be touching a lot of wood, knocking on a lot of wood, that the injury bug doesn't settle in too much. In fact, it's kind of ironic if you go back to the 2010-2011 season. Ottawa did gut us, but somehow, some way, we were able to scratch and claw our way into the playoffs and be a crossover seed. We actually finished fifth, whereas typically the top four teams in the division advanced to the playoffs. But we, in the Eastern Conference, us in fifth place had more points than the fourth place team in the opposing division. So we nabbed their spot. Ottawa didn't make the playoffs. They sent a huge care package with about five or six players down that had extensive NHL games under their belt that season, and it all culminated in a Calder Cup championship. So while we do complain about the looting from time to time, it can be overcome, and hopefully both teams have very much success this season and both stay away from injuries.
Indeed.
If it makes you feel any better, we'll just rehire Muckler for you.
I don't know if that'd be a. I won't comment.
Wise.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Grady. This has been a lot of fun.
Appreciate the time, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Grady Wittenberg for all that insight on the Binghamton Senators. It's a team I certainly try and keep up with, but there's nothing like talking to the voice of the team to get the more complete information on the players that we're interested in, both for now and for years to come.
Pretty quiet guy, eh?
It doesn't talk much. No, you can tell the enthusiasm that he has for the work that he does. I think it's great. Absolutely great. And his goal calls, top shelf. The Buffalo Sabres are just, I think the Buffalo Sabres as an organization, they're the new Brian Burke. They just have to be in the news for something all the time. Because first they were in the news for Patrick Kaleta, and then it was John Scott, and now it's Thomas Vanek. It's just, they have to be in the news all the time. I had two comments on Patrick Kaleta. Everybody knows how I feel about him. We don't need to get into that. Gary Bettman upheld the 10-game suspension. And I thought it was very interesting that there was not, as far as I could find, a single ounce of praise for Gary Bettman. It was, he did. That's what we wanted him to do. Okay, good. It wasn't, all right, he finally did the right thing. Nothing. Just, okay. Oh, but now we're going to see whether he appeals to the third party. So we'll see where that goes. I just found it interesting that there was nothing as far as you know, the commissioner did the right thing, at least that I saw. Did you guys see anything like that?
Sorry, are you looking for sympathy from us? Or?
Well, not sympathy. I was just looking for someone to, you know, to praise Gary Bettman, and I just didn't see any.
All right, congratulations, Gary Bettman, on not being a donkey this time.
That's what my mother would call damning with faint praise.
Well, that's pretty much how I felt about it. He always does a bad job.
Exactly. John Scott, as far as I can tell, he hasn't even had a hearing yet, but he's already missed two games on his indefinite suspension. There's been some talk that he might get 10 or 15 or 20 games. And I find that a very strange line of thought, because he's a first-time offender. And we've seen first-time offenders get, you know, five games, sometimes even less for a hit like the one that he put on somebody. Is he huge? Yes, but he's not as big as Zdeno Chara. So I don't understand this thought that, oh, well, he's going to get 20 games. He should be out of the league. It's a first-time offense.
Oh, just getting this out of like Twitter and stuff like that?
Yeah, like a lot of
it's
people.
It's leafers. It's all leafers.
No,
they're
no.
They're mad about Kessel. Yeah, the people are still mad about Kessel.
Ah, oh, suck it, leafers. Whatever.
Yeah, no, that's there it goes. That you know what's great? Even after all these deals and whatnot, Buffalo still spends more than Ottawa.
Well, they actually retained part of Vanek's salary to make this deal.
Yeah. Well, you just want to mention the details of the deal first, and then we'll talk about it.
The deal was Thomas Vanek, who's a UFA at the end of this season, was sent to the New York Islanders for Matt Molson, who's a UFA at the end of this season, and a first and a second.
Yep.
That's a pretty big gamble.
How's that for who?
The Islanders.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And I think really the Sabres ate the contract so that they can. I think they bought the draft pick.
They're looking to buy draft picks? Well,
no, because they got because it was probably something like Vanek for the first. Or sorry, Vanek for Molson in the first. Or Molson in the second. But the Islanders are like, well, we can't afford to pay him. Well, you take this first and his salary. And Buffalo's got the new owner, so I think we might see deals like this, and I think that's where Melnick wants to go, but...
Could be.
You're going to make up some bad old players for it.
I think it's actually going to be a bit of a gamble as far as either player staying where they're going.
Yeah. Granted, if we can get Yager out from New Jersey like that at trade deadline, if we're still in it, I love that. I know he didn't do much last year. He's probably not doing much now, but rental, why not?
Could be.
Oh, according to Melnick, we could get Yager, and we could get, the ex-Calgary dude there.
Iginla. Oh, yeah, they all fit within the cap.
Oh, yeah.
Never know.
We can get Cody Hodgson.
Maybe we'll have to get call up Danny Hobbs, too. We'd be all set.
Danny Hobbs plays for Elmira.
Well, it's a big call-up.
I'm sorry, there was a bit of a non sequitur on that one, that maybe I just was missing something, but okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to just go through and kind of vulture out the Sabres.
I think Vanek is going to end up in Minnesota after Minnesota dumps Heatley, who's a UFA at the end of this year.
Hell, the way that they're playing, I wouldn't mind getting over there myself.
Well, Thomas Vanek went to University of Minnesota.
Oh, did he? Okay.
And so did his wife. And he has a home there.
And they're going to be damn good.
Yeah, could well be. It's just a matter of they have enough money under their cap to be able to fit him in. Well, then Heatley's coming off. He's a $7.5 million cap hit. You never know, they could well do, depending on how it works out.
Ryan Miller's got a no trade where it says can list eight teams that he won't accept a trade to.
Yeah, and you can imagine that seven of those are Canadian ones.
Oh, he wants to go to Toronto, right? Everybody wants to go to Toronto.
Well, apparently, and one thing that I read was that the Sabres offered Vanek to the Leafs first.
Yep.
Yeah.
Didn't work out.
They've got no cap space. I don't even know if they've got any freaking picks.
Well,
yet.
Exactly. If they were going to do that, imagine what they would have had to give up to get the cap space necessary to bring him in. Yeah. I imagine that's probably why it didn't work.
But, probably Gardner.
No, Gardner's what, $1 million cap hit? Because Vanek's six and a half?
No, something. Jake Gardner's a savior, wasn't he?
No, he'll be gone, and he'll be gone by the end of the season. They have Morgan Riley now.
Just awesome.
There was an interesting comment made, and I wrote this down. I caught it very briefly, and I had to go back and find it because I thought it was a really, really interesting and thought-provoking comment that came out from Larry Robinson over the weekend. I don't know how much you guys remember Larry Robinson playing for Montreal. I mean, I know he played for LA briefly, but he is one of the quintessential Habs from growing up, for me at least.
Big Not Bird even always close.
Always a big. He was always on the blue line for me. He's just one of those fixtures. But that's just me.
Up as you talk here,
you Larry Robin. Okay.
Yeah. I know who he is.
Okay. Good local boy. He's from Marvelville, just outside Metcalf, which is why there's a street named after him down there. He was in the interview. He was talking about what he believes is a lack of respect at the NHL level of hockey today. And the two quotes that I wrote down was, I wouldn't have been in it as long as I have been if I didn't enjoy the game. And the respect is the part that I like the most. If there was anything that would make me turn away from the game, it's the way it's being played and how the league is being handled right now. And when asked about how many, mentioned how many concussions have happened in the last few weeks and the lack of respect of players for having for each other, he said, you have to question where our game is going sometimes. And I mean, Larry Robinson was a big, tough, you know, if you went into Larry Robinson's corner, you were going to get hammered. And if you decided to get into a fight with Larry Robinson, you were going to get destroyed because he was just that much bigger and stronger than everybody in the league. But he's an incredibly talented coach who actually, I mean, he was briefly promoted to a head coach. And he said, I don't want to do this. I just want to be an assistant coach. It's where I can spend more time on the ice working with players, which is what I want to do. And for somebody who's been around the game as long as Larry Robinson has to say something like that, it makes you stop and think how the game has changed from his era to this one. If he's saying, I don't think there's much respect going on in this game, especially between the players on the ice.
There's no respect in Montreal, right?
I was waiting for that.
It's also where he played. And he left Montreal when I was 9, just to make you feel bad.
Thank you. But I mean, he's been around. Like he's one of these guys who's been around the NHL for 30 some odd years.
Yeah, and the concussion part. I think there's a couple of things with that because concussions in his day, guys weren't wearing helmets. So were they not being disclosed or diagnosed, or is it just that the game is that much more fast now?
Well, the game is incredibly faster. It's faster, but it's also physical in a much more reckless way than it was. There were still hits thrown, but you weren't crashing into people when they were incredibly vulnerable, and you weren't doing it as fast, and you weren't necessarily doing it as recklessly, because the more armor that you have, the more reckless you can be. I mean, it's no different from looking at football from 50 years ago and now. There's no way the players who are playing today would be playing that way with the equipment from 50 years ago. You know, you wouldn't have a team to put on the field for the second half. Same with hockey players. Here, go play with the equipment from 50 years ago. You'd have, you know, 4 players left on your bench by the start of the third period. They'd all be hurt. Not necessarily concussions, just hurt.
No.
I just thought it was a really interesting comment.
Yeah.
And very telling, considering who it was who was saying it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like your point on DiPietro in the show notes here. I think you're going to skip over it. But...
No, I was just going to come back to that one.
Oh, okay.
DiPietro signed a 25-game tryout with the Charlotte Checkers at the AHL, who are the affiliate of the Hurricanes, because it becomes
Cam Ward's out.
Cam Ward's out. Hudobin's out, too. Or is he back now? He was out.
Hudobin's out?
He was out as of a couple of days ago, yeah.
Oh, man. You know what's great? When you sign a 25-year contract, then you got to replace that with a 25-day contract.
Now, the interesting thing would be to see which percentage of the contract he played more with, the 25-year or the 25-day one.
That's a very good point.
25 games.
That was fantastic timing. That was, listeners, that was not even planned. That was just incredible.
It's 25 games, the DiPietro side. Not 25 days, 25 games.
Oh, still.
Yeah. But I mean, if he's signing that, and teams are, you know, they're not the only team that's running out of goalies. Where, again, we were talking about Theodore and Brzgalov. I don't know where they're going to end up, but I can see them getting a shot sometime soon.
No, Theodore had a major, major groin injury last year. I don't think that he's able to, unless he gets a tryout.
Yeah.
And we'll see. If he saved up enough money, I'm sure that he might. He could go do Quebec TV, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, just why not? So I think he's gone. He's done.
He's not young. He's certainly got enough money, but if he still wants to play, you never know. Maybe he'll end up in Europe for a little while, or who knows. I just look at them as the guys who are still around without a contract, but are still in North America, who you could sign them if you need them. Don't know what kind of shape they're in, but you could. Hard to say. There was a very interesting call the other day in, were you watching the Montreal-Chicago game on Sunday night, was it?
It's in French. I only talk French or I'm getting paid.
Okay. I'm bringing this up because there was a hybrid icing call that I was watching the game with a few friends and we all sort of went, that was a whistle? Really? That looked like a playable puck to me. But it was whistled down and Coach Quenneville went ballistic.
I think I saw this.
For about 15 seconds, he was apoplectic. And one of the refs went over and basically the body language like, look, we blew it, okay? We know it. We
just
blew
it. Knock it off.
Yeah.
But good no, okay. If the thing is, if you call it, like, did they already drop the puck and he was still going?
No. This was before they had dropped the puck. So we blew
if
it.
If they admit fault, it's a face-off at center.
That's what they did. The face-off ended up being at center afterwards. He's like, we blew it, okay? We're going to have the face-off at center. And it was... And you could just, Canvold goes, you know, he goes from being at 100% to being right down to, really? Okay, we're good. I'm back to being my calm self now.
I'm right. Awesome.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate, noticing that the mistake was made and you're handling it properly.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you at first with my two Stanley Cup rings. In my ears.
It was actually kind of funny to watch, but the people I was watching the game with, we were all looking at it going, okay, you see, here we have the classic gray area problem where...
Oh, yeah. I've been going off all year about hybrid because of that.
And that's the problem with the hybrid thing. Just make it no touch. You take the gray area away. Bing, bang, boom. That's it. That's all. Done.
Explaining like offsides to someone who's new to the sport is one thing. Explaining icing before, a lot of people had difficulty. But the best explanation that I have now is if... the defensive team shoots the puck past the red line and is ahead of the player on the offensive team to get the puck at the hash marks. The play will continue and continues if that defensive player gets to the puck first.
And the score
However,
is within two goals.
If the offensive player is ahead and passes the hash marks, which is an invisible line, then the play will be called off. But if the defensive player is ahead of the offensive player and said offensive player catches up and touches the puck prior to the defensive player past the goal line, the play will be stopped for icing.
Well, there you have it.
I can't believe
that was clear.
That's good.
That's actually as right as you can get.
Yeah. And I hope people appreciated that because that's not bad.
I don't even know how I got that first try.
Craziness. Absolutely crazy.
But how is he the defensive player if it's in the offensive zone? Passes red line, blow. That's it.
Yeah. Everybody changes as soon as it crosses the red line. Yeah, okay, good. That's clear. Thank you. Sure, let's move on. It's a magic fairy pixie waves their magic wand and decides whether it's an icing or not. There's your answer. Let's move on. That's all you need to know. Peter Laviolette was replaced in Philadelphia after three games, and nothing has improved on that team so far. But which coach do you now think is on the thinnest ice, pun intended, at the moment? Is it? I mean, I honestly don't even remember the name of the guy in Philadelphia who replaced Laviolette, but that team is still struggling very much.
It was a rough guy. I forget his name.
Okay. Is it Alain Vigneault in New York?
Yeah,
or Vigneault's screwed.
Or is it, I can't think of his first name, Noel in Winnipeg?
It's Vigneault.
Sorry? I would say Vino.
Madison Square Garden, Manhattan Stage. Yeah, he's in trouble.
I am shocked that he was actually able to make it to the home opener. I totally thought they were going to can him before that. I think he got away with it because Lundqvist was hurt. I am not a fan of Claude Noel. I haven't seen a player or a coach since Corey Kluson able to throw his players under the bus as well as he does and get away with it.
He does it a lot, doesn't he? Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that because I've been watching interviews with him, you know, little sound clips after games, and he does that a lot. And it's not just a light one either. It's a big bus. It's not like a taxi. It's a big
bus. This is Winnipeg's third year now?
Yes, because they spent a full season and the shortened season still in the West. Yeah.
My thing about it, if I was one of the old guys from Atlanta, even Andrew Ladd, right? So, okay, well, I've got to move because my team is moving, but it's not really the team that's moving. It's like, and I don't know if either one of you have ever worked in a situation like this. I haven't really, but it's as though your company gets bought out and management changes everything.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been through that.
So I don't know what Claude Noel's experience and qualifications are, and I don't think he really has any, especially at the NHL level. So you're coming from a team from Atlanta that we're actually starting to really go well. I'm a big fan of Pavlich's also, and then you've got this rookie coach coming in going, you guys are terrible, blah blah blah, and I'm going to go out and openly speak out against you, and he's dumped on Pavlich and Pavlich keeps him in the game. As an employee, I'd be like, what the hell is this? I got to get out of here. Unless you revolt, which you can at the NHL.
No.
So I have never been a fan, but Winnipeg, I think money is an issue where they're, and they just extended him too, I think. So,
I don't know.
That's, I think they extended him in the summer, but, and they extended the GM by like 5 years. So he can't show any faults whatsoever. I don't think he's the best coach. A lot of people like him for his sound bites, but you know, a lot of people like Tortorella for his sound bites too.
I'm hard pressed to figure which one might be on thinner ice. They both seem to be fairly thin, but you know, Noel's been there for a couple of years already. So
The Rangers are much, much more trouble.
It's a much bigger stage to be on as well, for sure. There was talk just in the last couple of days, and of course, with all the sports media in this country being Toronto-centric, as soon as one of them started to talk about it, they all had to. And it's all rumor, it's all innuendo. Neither the team nor the agent are talking about it, but the number that the information that's being tossed around is a new contract extension for Dion Phaneuf at 7 years and $50 million. So that would be slightly less than what Phil Kessel's making. But
that's offense defense. Totally makes sense.
Yes, but don't know who's making it, but this is the number that's being thrown around. Of course, everybody's talking about it. I personally want to see that happen.
Yeah,
I just want to see them handcuffed.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Am I that transparent?
Yeah. Do it.
Okay. You first. You first.
Well, that would mean that they have Kessel, Bozak, JVR, Lupul, Clarkson, and Dion Phaneuf, that's six players, tied up for at least 4 years.
Better give them a no trade.
Well, they all the other ones have one, so he'd have to have one too. A no trade, no movement. And that would be, what did I add it up to? About $35, $36 million for six players. And they have Kadri and Franson coming up again soon.
They'll fill it with plugs.
I guess so.
Yeah.
They'll have to. They won't have any money for anything else. Yeah. I think I want to have it happen. So I want to see that so badly. Yeah. What could be better?
Did you want to go? Did you have something?
No, just do it.
Because we keep cutting you off.
Just do it.
All right. So this is very interesting. There's a couple of things with this. First, I'll start off with, don't tell me this during the second intermission between a game between Chicago and Ottawa. That was the whole... Oh, I got to be careful because we want McKenzie on the show. But that was the whole intermission. It's like, I don't know if they just record one show and show it for all the broadcasts, which are like whatever, but what the hell?
Nope. Very true.
I was pissed.
Was Kiprios on that panel?
No. It's the two weekday guys.
Oh.
I thought Kiprios was on that one. There were three at one point.
I don't think so.
There's a guy I can't stand.
I didn't even pay attention to it after that. I just lost my mind. Secondly, Toronto is very, very sensitive about letting guys walk after
Sundin.
And I'll be honest with you, Ottawa's going to be very sensitive about letting people walk after Alfredson.
Oh, yeah.
And Chera.
Chera, that was a team's choice.
Sort of.
Team's choice.
But you're right. We elected to hang him on and take the chance.
Yeah. Anyhow, we'll see. I think this will be an interesting intrigue going, you know, as time progresses through this season, because it is the last season on his agreement, and he does not currently have a no trade clause. So maybe they'll end up trading him if they can't come to a deal. Who knows? Could get very interesting.
For what?
Three first round picks for that one.
Who knows?
Oh yeah.
Some team may want him.
Yeah, Melnick's got a few picks for
He's a 3-4D. Actually, that's a problem. He's a 3-4D.
Exactly.
But it's, you overhype these guys. He's great 3-4. 1-2 is not awesome. But I like how you put hybridizing on here again.
Sorry.
That aggravating. Oh, no. I could go on about it again, too.
I was editing and I moved it up. I thought it was better than it down where it was. And so, sorry.
And, what was it that I used to tweet all the time? Hybridizing is stupid?
Yeah.
Oh, it's unnecessarily complicated. It's daft.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Shall we move on to email? We got a couple of good emails, email notes to read, which have some stuff that we can talk about in them. Why don't we get there? Canuck, you're up for the first one from Andrew.
Hey, fellas. This is subject Habs and Leafs fan. This is a follow-up on the Habs and Leafs fans, and who is worse? I think we all know who is worse, and it becomes a rhetorical question. These Leaf fans have zero respect for anyone, for anybody, including themselves when they show up at a game night at the Canadian Tire Center. Wrong cue. See, I'm getting rusty at this. How often do you see people ejected from games when any of the other 29 teams come to the building? Oh yeah, that's right. Never. I don't attend Sens and Leaf games anymore. Not because I'm intimidated by these morons, but because I'm afraid I'll harm somebody and end up in jail. Of course, I'm being half serious when I say that, but for people who don't know me, it takes a lot for me to lose it. But that's how bad these games have gotten. I remember 3 years ago, Saturday, November 27th, 2010, versus the Leafs, the Sens won 3-0. After the game, I saw a grown man wearing a Leafs jersey spit in a teenager's girl's face, who, yes, was a Sens fan. I want to get into all the graphic details of the incident, but for those that don't remember, both the Sens and Leafs were terrible that year, and it was a nothing game, which makes this even more idiotic. This is just one example of horror stories I have from these games. The Sens can heighten security for these games all they want, but I feel like enough isn't being done. Yes, cheering for your team is one thing, but coming to the rink to ruin it for others and to be a complete jerk off and to think you look cool doing it? Well, that's completely another thing. So in conclusion, Habs fans are people you could actually sit in a room and talk hockey with, whereas with Leaf fans, you just want to punch them in the face as soon as they open their mouth. Yes, I understand that watching the Sens in the playoffs while their team has been golfing for the past decade is hard, but all the more reason why you should have respect for the Sens. For being much more successful, spending a lot less money. So Leafs Nation, F you on behalf of the Sens Army. Thanks. Great show, guys. Andrew.
That sounded
go ahead.
Yeah, that sounded like me reading.
Hey, I had a thought about this the other day, and what do you guys think of this? We can't stop people who are Toronto Maple Leafs fans from coming to the game. We can't. We don't want to. We want their money, to be honest. You know, everybody's money. What I was suggesting is, or what my thought on this was, a lot of them become the way they are because they have a really strong sense of, look at the gang that's here. There are so many of us. We can take this place over. And there's one really simple way to diminish that greatly. Take away their gang colors. You're not allowed to wear a blue and white jersey in this building. You wear
No.
Why not?
You can't do that.
Why not? You can come to the game all you like, but you cannot wear that jersey in this building.
No.
That's something Melnick would come up with, and it'd be just the laughing stock of the league.
Now, and what I've been trying to do on Twitter, and I don't really want people to take pictures of these people, but I would rather mock the spot the idiots during the games when we're not playing the Leafs. But if you're there and you want to support a team that is playing, absolutely. But do it respectfully. Spitting in a girl's face? Come on.
Oh, I was at a game with you last year, and it was a Leafs Sens game. Yeah. And I had to go to the can, and while I was in it,
goals were scored.
No, that's not me. That's you guys. Because I went during the intermission. But there was a kid, and I say a kid, at most 12 years old. I'm thinking more like 10, 11, who was wearing a Sens jersey. And there were four Leaf fans in their 20s, like full-grown adults, in a circle around him yelling at him that Sens suck and Leafs rule. And this little boy was reduced to tears. Well, what do you expect? You have these four giants around you doing this. And they were laughing about it as they left the bathroom. Oh, that was hilarious, man. We should find another one. Do that again. Seriously. No word of a lie. And I just shook my head, and I actually went over and said, you know, you okay? Your parents here? I'll walk out with you if you want. And he's like, no, it's okay. My daddy's outside. All right, cool. Just checking on you. I don't know.
I did not know this story.
Oh yeah.
But here's the thing.
I was
people
curious.
Let this happen.
Well,
Do
it was
you
happening
see a little
as
I, like that.
Dude, it was happening as I walked in.
You should have seen me at the last game where someone jumped in or cut in line in front of me at the popcorn. I chirped him right out. He knew he was wrong, but he was still complaining about it. I see, and granted, I'm small, so there's a limited amount of things that of type of intensity that I can do. I'll just chirp at you the whole time, but come on. You're going to make a kid cry in the washroom at their home game. It could be quite traumatizing.
Very much so, but they thought it was funny. And it was happening just as I was walking in, so it's not like I could have. Like, I just jumped. Well, it was kind of happening it was finishing as I walked in. But everybody else who was there, I'm like, what are you people doing?
This is all they got. This is all they got. They got nothing else to do in life.
No. I just thought it was absolutely pathetic.
But someone's got to do something about it.
Yeah.
First responsibility is to the building. Because, in going back a couple of years when they had that clip of the guy that was yelling about the lanes of the highway.
Yeah.
He was there for probably a good 7-8 minutes.
There was ushers right there too.
Sorry?
There were ushers
there. Absolutely. One, yes, he's lucky he didn't get punched out by somebody else. Two, why is a building allowing him to do that?
Because the building, the ushers, well, I mean, and I'm not saying this to be nasty, but the ushers aren't really people who are built to take people out. They have to wait for the police who may be in another section of the building to take them out.
Well, you don't have to take them out, but you tell them to stop. If you tell me that I have to recycle a freaking beer can and you're letting this guy harass everyone where it could end up into an all-out brawl, you've got the red coat on. It's your responsibility just to say, listen, this isn't acceptable.
I agree. And they should, I think they should be more active at doing that for sure, because they aren't right now. Yeah. There's way too much of this stuff that get even right down to people who are, you know, the game is on and they walk straight past them and start walking up to their seat. They're like, sir, can you wait? And they, or ma'am, can you wait? And they just keep walking. Like, well, no. You stand in their way and you tell them not to, that they have to wait. You don't just sort of stand off to the side and say, excuse me, would you please? You got to be a little more active in that. I agree. But, Ella, I'm a bit more draconian in the way I like to fix problems like this.
Well, you make me really reconsider whether I want to bring my family to the Leafs game in December.
Very true.
I have four tickets for it, and I'm thinking, maybe this is not a good idea.
Well, I agree. I agree completely. Because a friend of mine was at a game, and one of the ones last year, and she was there with her parents, and her parents are in their 60s, and sitting right beside them was a young man and woman with probably a nine-month-old baby. And behind them were about 15 drunken, lout, idiot Leafers who were, you know, dropping F-bombs the entire night and spraying them with beer and all sorts of stuff.
Well, was that the beer that's kind of like hanging out with me?
Well, no, they were, you know, as they were, goals were scored, they were rainbowing it kind of thing.
Oh, right?
So there, these people, this couple with their nine-month-old baby are getting covered in beer.
Oh.
Charming. Really good. Anyway. Let's move on. We could talk about this one all night. Pan, you're up for the next one from David.
All right. David from, and subject, hi from Northern UK. Hi there, call-ups. Just thought I'd drop you a line and say hi from Northern England. Right up top near Scotland. Isn't that Ireland? Same thing.
Not the same thing.
Must be one of the more remote groundhogs. No, probably. So let us know where you guys are. I asked for this a long time ago, so I haven't gotten that. I've been listening since a call-up started. Quite a brave move following the original lineup, who are great. You've done a great job keeping me up to date with Sens News. You're my regular listen on my runs. At least one of us is getting a workout. My question is, any regrets on the Ben Bishop trade, especially now that the new goalie pad rule has come in? Surely a huge guy like Bishop is at an advantage. Also, what other podcasts are you guys listening to? Have you got a top three as ever Leafs suck? All right. Thanks, Dave. So going back to Ben Bishop, what do you guys think?
I don't think to answer his question, I don't think the new goalie pad rules are necessarily disadvantaged, judging by the conversation or the interview that I saw with Robin Lehner a few weeks ago. He is tall enough that he can still use the 28-inch stick, though. So that's an advantage for him compared to Robin Lehner, who's 6'5". I guess that I would say that for me, the jury is still out on Corey Conacher as to whether he will be a regular NHL player, because I think Ben Bishop will be, if not as a starter, he will be a regular in a lineup as a backup. At least he's certainly playing well right now in Tampa, who are quietly amassing a very good win loss ratio. So, for me, the jury's still out. I'm not sure.
Canuck?
No, we could have got something better, but no regrets.
If we would have gone into the playoffs with three goalies, there would have been hell on earth.
Yep.
Because knowing that there'd be an asset like that, that we could trade for top six. Corey Conacher did get us that last minute goal that ran us into this two overtime game. Or double overtime game. It's going to be a long show. So that's... We had to move him from the other names out there that we've apparently heard. I really like Conacher. I'm okay with the trade. We also got the other pick, the fourth rounder. I don't remember who it was. It's a European player. So that's not all that we got for Ben Bishop. And it's a different market. I'm sure now you could trade Bishop for something quite good with all the goalie problems that are around the league, but it's a different season completely. So I don't think we had anything else there. For the podcasts, actually, I've never asked you guys these because I do need more of them. Myself, my top three, I listen to a lot of the Kevin Smith stuff in the small cast. NPR Planet Money is really good. So that's, it's an economic show off of, well, it's NPR. So it's very left, and it's, you learn a lot about the economy, and they put it and word it in a way that's very, very easy to follow. They've done some other weird stuff for micro businesses recently or other things that don't necessarily interest me, but their stuff's really good. Third one's a comedy show, Stop Podcasting Yourself. That was the first podcast that I listened to. And if you think we're Canadian, those guys are, they're great.
I'm not familiar with that one. Canuck? Podcasts?
Let me pull it up. Why don't you go first there, Cardinal?
Okay. First I'd say the one that I don't get to listen to it every week because I sometimes don't remember to, but we have to give a plug to the Comedy Above the Pub podcast, Cat P, which is produced by a friend of the show, Todd Van Allen. I do enjoy that one. I also happen to listen to a couple of, strangely enough, CBC podcasts. My favorite of which is one called Under the Influence, which is a radio show about advertising and the influences and how advertising is designed to influence you in ways that you don't always notice at the time. Other than that, I would say I listen to CBSSports.com fantasy football during football season. I don't actually listen to a lot of other hockey stuff other than one-offs where NHL on the ice. I'll listen to them when I can, if I can catch the show live. That's about it for me, though.
I'd say for me, well, I got, I'm in the security business. So, let's see, we got the Liquid Matrix Security Digest podcast, Network Security podcast. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for sports fans. Jay and Dan, good one. You mentioned Cat P.
That one's gotten worse since they've gone down. So,
I
don't enjoy it as much.
It's not as good, but you know, they're on the list. Hockey related, Leafs Sens Nation, also Fan versus Fan, the NHL on the Ice, Yates and Ames. I don't listen to all these religiously, but hey, stuff's out there
when you can. Yeah, so there you go. I some of these I've never actually heard of before, so I'm gonna ask you guys about them again later so that I can or I'll just listen to this episode once it's once it's published and go have a look at them, because some of them actually do sound interesting. Anything else, or shall I go on to the last email of the night?
Go ahead.
All right. Last email of the night is from Boingy. Subject line, checking in for the year, a bit light. Late. Greeting call-ups, Boingy reporting from behind enemy lines. I've been missing in action since the beginning of the season, but I'm listening in and plan to get into it with you folks in the forum soon. Other than that very satisfying game against Detroit, there hasn't been much to cheer about this season. You guys, though, are doing your excellent job on the podcast. I can't tell you how important it is to be able to connect to other Sens fans when you're living outside of Ottawa. When you're a fan of a team that doesn't have a national media presence like Toronto or Montreal do, it's easy to lose track of the goings-on in Ottawa. I can get game recaps and highlights easy enough down here, but I miss a lot of the lineup discussions, trade rumors, call-ups to and from bingo, and all the rest of that fan experience. As far as even the Canadian media is concerned, Ottawa may as well be Columbus for all the attention they pay to it. Plugging into the Ottawa Fan Network is especially important for those of us who are surrounded by the fans of the Toronto Yard Waste. Man, who was it who said that? That's even better than the Screaming Trees. It's brilliant. That was fellow Groundhog Blair Brown who quoted that a few episodes ago. Every time Phil Kessel coughs or Dion Phaneuf farts, it's headline news. Irritating. So yeah, thanks for being my lifeline.
Whoa. Kessel coughed?
Yes,
emergency episode.
He was choking on a piece of broccoli. It's okay. I do, however, have to correct Pan on one thing. On the last show, you said that the original Ottawa Senators were now the St. Louis Blues. I looked up when you said that and thought, nah, I don't think that's right. According to Wikipedia, the source of all accurate information, of course, the original Senators did indeed move to St. Louis in 1934 to become the St. Louis Eagles, where that team suspended operation in 1935, never to return. The league bought out the franchise, dispersed its players, and that was that. The NHL returned to St. Louis in 1967 when the Blues were established as part of the same expansion that brought in the Los Angeles Kings, the Minnesota No Stars, remember them, the Oakland Golden Seals, anybody remember them, Philadelphia Flyers, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. But as I understand it, those six clubs were all brand new franchises. So the St. Louis Blues
had no more organizational connection to the old St. Louis Eagles than the new Ottawa Senators have to the old Ottawa Senators. They may share geography and, in Ottawa's case, a team nickname, but that's it. So, there you go. Keep up the great work, and yard waste sucks. Boingy.
Hey, Boingy, it's a free podcast. I'm doing this from memory. I just remember that they moved to St. Louis. No refund, sucker!
Yeah, we do what we can with what we have, and you know, we're usually recording this fairly late at night. It's early night at the moment. I mean, it's not even midnight yet, so we should be sharp. But some nights it gets very late when we're recording. So if we slip up from time to time, well, we mean to do it just to generate email. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, thanks for the email, though, Boingy. That was it's great to hear from people, and thank you, David and Andrew as well. I second Pan's call just to check in from around where you are. It's nice to hear from people, whether they're in the Ottawa area, but especially from beyond, as to how far you actually are. Because you guys got to meet a couple of listeners, or several listeners, when you were down in California a couple of weeks ago. It'd be fun to find out where those people are.
You don't even like going to the games, though, so I don't know when you're going to meet them.
Oh, we'll have a get-together or something. I admit it. Okay. I don't... The in-game experience for me is something I really only want to do 3 times, 4 times a year. More than that, it's a complete waste of my time and money. It doesn't do it for me.
Let's go waste someone else's money then. Listeners, donate to the show. Go to sensunderground.com, hit that button on PayPal. Woo!
Very much. No, I mean, it's something I like to do once in a while, but it's not something I want to do very often. I enjoy doing this, but being at a game a lot, it's not really my thing. I'd rather be, you know, sitting at home where I have my own bathroom.
And or fishing.
Wait, it's
on the fridge. Yeah, I'm not doing a very good job at selling tickets to this team. I admit it. I'm being honest, so I don't really worry about it too much.
You could be one of Melnick's funnels there that just loses money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I won't feel the least bit guilty about it either. It is getting a little late. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I think we've talked enough. And had some good discussion as well as a fantastic interview. So hopefully people have been interested. 4.5
Yeah.
Absolutely. At least. The week to...
I'm trying to cut it down.
Yeah. Some weeks it works, some weeks it doesn't. It's all right. The week to come, this Friday is game 13, Friday, November 1st. The Islanders... You're going to that one? Yep. Go find Pan. He likes Creemore and King Cans. Game 14 is Sunday, November 3rd. That's an afternoon game, I believe.
I'm going. Yeah, 1 o'clock start.
A 1 o'clock start, okay. For the Dallas Stars visiting the Senators. And then next Tuesday evening, the Senators are in Columbus against the Blue Jackets. And we should be back after that.
So, I was thinking of going, but I'm not.
It's a long drive. And there's... I drove down to Peoria, ran to Dayton in 2 different trips about 10, 12 years ago. And it is so flat, you can actually see 3 cell towers from now. So you can see the one you're on and the one 8 kilometers away and the one 16 kilometers away. It's that flat and that boring.
I don't have the attention span for that.
It was astonishingly dull. But this is what you get. Anything else, boys?
No, I think we're hopefully going to try to record in person, so that might improve our quality. Depends on our schedules and whatever's going on.
And if my back decides to cooperate.
Yeah.
And hey, listeners, there's only a couple of days left. Get out to Mucho Burrito and try the Ghost Pepper Burrito.
Gotta have.
And maybe we can organize something before the Day of the Dead. When is the Day of the Dead? It's not Halloween. It's weekend?
All Saints Day is and All Souls Day are coming up November 1st and 2nd. So there you go. Day of the Dead is usually one of those two.
Okay.
All right. Well, folks, we've talked a lot about tonight. We're looking to find out where you are. We're looking for your opinions. Please feel free to agree, disagree, come up with stuff you want us to talk about. Just tell us where you are. Email us at podcast@senscallups.com. Visit the online forums. Follow us on Twitter. Interact with us on Twitter. The team's 3-0-1 against Eastern teams. I'm still clinging to that. It's a pretty small thing to cling to, but I'm going to cling to that. And we've got games coming up against Eastern teams, so I'm hoping it bodes well. Until next week, good night.
Later. Have a happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
That's as creepy as my voice gets. That was awful.